to another episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast for Thursday. I don't even know what the date is. 2017. Upon this recording, ladies and gentlemen, we are 8 days away from Halloween. That's right. Everyone's favorite holiday, unless you like Christmas, which I don't know. If you like Christmas more than Halloween, I'd have to question you being a listener of my podcast. Halloween's where it's at. That's what's up. Epic Film Guy Nick, he's not here this week. I have no idea where he is, what he's doing. He might have told me, and I might have been just too drunk to remember, as I am for most of the stuff that he tells me. But I love you, Nick. He's out this week. I think honestly what it is that he knows it's horror season. He doesn't want to watch any horror movies. It's the Epic Film Guys 31-Day Horror Challenge, and I know that he's watched literally maybe less than 5 movies. So this is his way of saying, I don't want to do it. But fortunately for us, ladies and gentlemen out there, we have a special guest host this week, and someone that you have not heard on the Epic Film Guys podcast yet. Let me welcome Fear from Fearcast. And welcome to the show, man. Thank you so much for being here.
No, thanks for having me, brother.
And, you know, I was telling Nick and I was telling you pre-show here, I've had my eye on doing something with you for a while. I love my horror. And as our listeners know, listening right now, Nick just, he doesn't like it. It's not his thing. So we do our B-side episodes on the Epic Film Guys podcast with Loy Sauce whenever he gets the time to do it. But now that he is the creative manager at our local Alamo Draft House, he doesn't have that much time. And Nick's kind of got a side project going on right now, so he doesn't have all the time in the world to edit us blabbing about whatever slasher film or whatever, you know, schlocky ass 80s horror movie we want to talk about. So it is what it is. But yeah, man, so how you doing this week? What's going on?
Doing great, man. Like I said, very excited to be here. It's been great. We've been chatting it up on Instagram. I do my Fearcast 31 where I just watch. I mean, like we've said before, we kind of watch all year round, but I like to post a lot, especially this time. And I've been trying to do your challenge, looking for movies I actually haven't seen.
Yeah,
so that's been pretty fun.
It's always fun this time of year because I feel like I put more pressure on myself than any other time of the year to try to find stuff that I haven't watched. But as our listeners know, and I'm sure you may have seen if you followed my IG, that I was in California for like the first week and a half of the month. So I actually didn't watch any horror films the entire time I was on my trip to California. So I was kind of stuck. I mean, I was seeing horror locations.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's even, in my opinion, it's even better because I got to see these pictures, man. You got to go to some legendary places.
Yeah, I did. And despite my wife's anger towards me for doing so, you know, I'm like, oh, dude, the Poltergeist house is only, you know, like 45 miles out of the way. Can we? It's just a house. But I'm like, no, but it's, come on, please. I'll never come back to that area, you know. So she, you know, she humored me and allowed me to do it just to drive all the way there for me to stand there for a couple minutes. But yeah, it was fantastic. And, you know, it's funny because I was listening to one of your episodes, I think it was like your 90s horror from like back in July, actually. And I heard you had mentioned that you were kind of not upset, but like you said, how there's not a lot of great horror coming out right now. And I'd seen on your website that you had seen The Babysitter recently. Is that correct? Did you watch The Babysitter?
That is correct. Yep, I did.
I saw it last week and I did not have a chance to give a full review on the show, but hey man, we're here, we have an open slate, we can do whatever we want. What did you think of that movie? Because I'm really interested in hearing people's thoughts on Nick G's The Babysitter.
Yeah, you know what? That one shocked me. Actually, I had someone reach out and kind of say, hey, I'd love for you to watch this and let me know what you think. And so I sat down and in first run through, I was like, nah, this isn't
really
for me.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. But I was pretty preoccupied with some other shit that I was dealing with, and I did not give it the full attention that it deserved. And so when I spoke back to this person, I was like, dude, it was too jumpy. This happened. But, and he's like, whoa, did we watch two different movies? Like, what are you talking about? And I was like, well, he's like, give it another shot. And so I sat down, only the movie, nothing else going on. And second run through, I was like, holy shit, it is like watching a different movie because it's super, super well done. It's got this sort of like Scott Pilgrim versus the World meets like Scream, and it's really, really, actually really funny. And then like the horror elements you get on top of it, you're like, okay, all right, I'm in.
Yeah, no, I can totally relate. I stayed away from it for a little while. I'd see some of my Instagram friends talking about they're posting they were watching it, and that poster is great. But then I kept looking, and I'm like, dude, it's Mick G. I'm like, how am I gonna do this? I'm like, I've seen one decent movie of his ever, in my opinion at least, and it was the first Charlie's Angels movie, and I showed it to my daughter, I think, within the last year or so, because she's at that age where she's wanting to see more movies from a different era. And I was like, it's fine, you know, it's good popcorn fluff for what it is. But I don't consider him like an auteur or director or anyone that could do anything great. Then when I watched it, I'm like, oh my god, this is like if Joe Dante made this movie, like if he was a young guy and made it now, like how quippy it was and how fun it was and the jokes and you know, like the elbows and the ribs, kind of like wink wink nod nod stuff. And
yeah.
And dude, the gore was just so fucking good. It was like, on the subject of modern horror, which I do love and I support, I've seen a lot of great horror films this year, it's rare to see horror films in the theater that feature great gore, like awesome splatter effects, you know what I mean? So
oh yeah,
this was just as bloody as can be, and I love that they threw all the practical stuff in there, even if, you know, there's some CG blood splatter and stuff. I actually enjoyed the hell out of it, and part of me having to mention this right now is because one of our sponsors and our good friend Director Brennick from the Netflix and Swill podcast, he seemed a little bit upset that I didn't do a full review of it last week, because I had just seen Happy Death Day and we were kind of catching up from my trip. So I figured we would go in depth a little bit and talk about it. So I'm glad you enjoyed it, man. I feel like any horror fan out there that hasn't watched it, it's on Netflix right now. I know like pretty much everyone in the whole United States has Netflix. Be sure to check it out. So yeah, man, that's what's up with that. But there's something on this show, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, that we do every single week that we like to call What Are You Drinking?
I'm back! Puke and Rally! Yeah. Woo! Give me a beer!
And so, dude, I'm going to throw it to you right now. You're our guests. I don't know if you have anything in your hand there. I don't know if you're drinking anything. But if you do, tell me right now, what do you got?
Right now, I'm going with this is kind of my go-to lately. It's just Bacardi O'Cart with Coke Zero. It's a nice little... I don't know. I just love the flavor of O'Cart. I don't know if you're into that at all, but it's definitely delicious and does your body good.
It sounds like it would. Definitely. I'm sure that if Nick was here, he'd probably have something more to say about it than I do, but it does sound delicious. Myself, yep. Ladies and gentlemen, that's right. I'm drinking another New England-styled IPA. Nick's going to hate me for it. He calls me the New England beer snob now. But when I was out in California, you'd think that I'd be looking for California West Coast beers. And while I did have a handful of those, I was out there looking for the breweries doing New England-styled IPAs in California. And two of the best are in California. And this is one of the beers that I stowed away in my luggage. I bought some cans from Alvarado Street Brewery in Monterey. It is the Vengeful Barbarian. It is the most brutal sounding beer that I have in my fridge that I could drink while we're going to be talking about horror tonight. So I figured perfect beer for the occasion. It is a New England IPA, so it's lower in the IBUs. It's 35 IBUs and 7.2% alcohol by volume. Caleb, I know out there you love hearing me talk about the details and stats on the beer, so there it is, and it tastes delicious. I loved this beer. I fell in love with it so much that when I was there, I even bought the little glass with the Barbarian on it. So that's what's up there. So I'm drinking that tonight. I'm ready to go. And for our listeners out there, we got something special in store for you tonight. Fear and I are going to count down our top 10 slasher flicks. That's right. My favorite, well, I would have to say, yes, my favorite horror genre is slashers. So we're going to be talking about that. It's something that would never, ever happen on the Epic Film Guys podcast if Nick was hosting. So I'm taking advantage. I'm doing whatever the fuck I want. And I hope you guys enjoy it. So we're going to take a quick little break here. And then when we come back, we're going to be counting down our top 10 slasher flicks. We'll be right back.
This week in epic film history.
Most people would agree this is one of his more iconic films. It is They Live. Fuck this movie. Starring Rowdy Roddy Piper and Keith David. Have you guys seen this? You guys have all seen this one, right?
You know what, Wayne? Yeah, Wayne, I gotta say, I agree with you 100%. Oh, I thought this movie was a piece of shit. Oh, God, I hate you.
How dare you?
Oh.
It's bullshit,
it's
man.
It's such a piece of shit.
How can you not like a film that's about aliens who have already invaded and taken over society and are subliminally controlling us through ways that we don't even
I suspect
realize
that those aliens have infiltrated you and Justin and made you love this movie along with a lot of other people. We're going to get a lot of shit for this winging over on Twitter and stuff, but I don't give a shit.
This movie was terrible. You should both
put the fucking glasses on.
Hand over
the film
business.
This was by far. It's during the Reagan era. It makes total sense as a response to the Reagan era as far as what politics were. You got to think within its context and when it was made, and it was John Carpenter's way after making many studio films of just being two huge middle fingers, being like, fuck you, I don't care, I'm going to make a movie about my personal feelings about politics and the government at this time during the Reagan era, and it fits perfectly. It's fun, it's, you know, it's cheesy, but it's in the 80s. People keep forgetting that, you know. See, me and Paul understand that because we love fucking 80s films.
False.
So if you don't love,
I saw
three.
There are three movies that John Carpenter directed in the 80s on my list. So
but this
that's
is the
bullshit.
Most. This is one of the most 80s. Other
that's
than Big
bullshit.
Trouble, other dude, no, it's not. It's actually 100% correct. Outside of Big Trouble in Little China, this is
it
the most.
Doesn't
80s
have anything
film
to do with being an 80s film. It's just a bag of shit.
Exactly. I remember when it came out, I thought it was a joke. And
this is coming from the guy that doesn't like Patrick Swayze. Film, so leave that at the door, Nick. Head out the door. We can move on.
Except to acknowledge the great fight scene that runs for like 15
love
minutes.
Love it. One of the best ever.
It goes
on
forever.
Especially for wrestling
fans. I was almost
falling
asleep. Oh, God.
Me too. It was a late night thing.
It might be time to change up co-host, I think, Justin.
I am going to gloat a little bit. I went and bought, ladies and gentlemen, a 65-inch 4K Ultra HD with HDR television.
Justin, I got to hear Paz de la Huerta deliver all of her lines just like this. Like, she recorded them, and then someone slowed the track down so it would sound like she had seven dicks in her mouth.
Hey, if you want to do this, if you promise to be an Ewok, I'll stop dieting and going to the gym, and I'll just start eating like garbage every fucking day and drinking a case of beer, Bud Light, Keystone, you name it, to be as fat as fuck as I can be, to be Jabba the Hutt.
And welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for sticking with us here on the Epic Film Guys podcast. I'm so, so, so excited about this segment that we're going to do now. I never thought this would ever happen on the show, and Nick, I'm so thankful that you decided to take a week off during horror season so it could happen. We are going to be counting down our top 10 slasher flicks. That is right, slashers, one of my favorite genres of horror, and I've got Fear from Fearcast here to do that with me tonight. So we're going to start right off, and we're going to count down from 10 down to 1, and I'm going to throw it to him. He's our guest on the show this evening, so I'm throwing it to you for your number 10, man, for your number 10 slasher flick.
So for my number 10, I went with a good old Canadian film from 1974. I went with Black Christmas.
Oh, man, wow. That is an amazing, amazing flick, and that may or may not show up on my list in a little bit. It may be like way closer to my top five or top two, or you never know. It may be up there, so just be prepared. So Black Christmas for you at number 10. Oh man, okay. All right, well. My number 10
It is within the same vein. It also celebrates the same holiday. It takes place during the same holiday. That's right. It's Charles E. Sellier's Silent Night, Deadly Night. Okay, and this one is set during Christmas, and the story is about a young man named Billy who suffers from post-traumatic stress because he saw his parents get murdered on Christmas Eve. And he's brought up in an abusive Catholic orphanage, and when he's a man, he grows up, man. You know, he's working at a toy store, and he decides to just start killing people because of a psychological breakdown. And then he dresses up as Santa, and yeah, he's a slasher killer on Christmas. And the reason why I picked this movie is because I remember being a kid and being at my grandparents' house way before I'd be old enough to see this. And there was like a Christmas documentary on the History Channel or something. and they had mentioned this. They had talked, they had a whole segment on it and how horrible it was because, you know, parents picketed it and they protested it. It was only in the theaters for less than 2 weeks because there was so much controversy. I mean, the film was released in November of 1984, if I recall, and there was so many people pissed about this because all the ads pictured Santa Claus killing people with an axe and, you know, all that shit's so great to me. But as a kid, it just intrigued me so much. So when I was old enough to finally catch this flick on VHS, I certainly did so. And while as a slasher, you know, it's got some great kills. One of my favorites is probably dude going down the hill on the sled and gets his head lopped right off. You know, it's not, I would say, the best, but as far as, you know, iconic slashers and the controversy behind it and how fucking weird it is and the tone of it and everything, I had to throw it on my list. So that's right, ladies and gentlemen. And I know that Loy Sauce is going to give me shit for this because I showed it to him last year and he was like, I don't really know why you like this movie, but for me, it's got it's got to be on the list. So my number 10 is Silent Night, Deadly Night. I'm going to throw
that's
it out.
That's awesome, dude.
I'm going to throw it out over you. Yeah, I think it's awesome. And
no, that's funny that we both were kind of like, you know, we'll start off in the Christmas area.
I mean, like we were just talking about earlier pre-show, I mean, Halloween's almost upon us. After Halloween, what else do we have to look forward to, man? You know, then there's Christmas. I mean, I do like Christmas movies, but I always look forward to Christmas so I can watch Silent Night, Deadly Night, and other Christmas-related horror films. So
yeah, same.
You know? But yo, man, it's up. It's on you, man. What's your number 9?
So number 9, and I don't know why I ended up going with another Canadian movie, but I always really liked My Bloody Valentine.
Oh, dude. You keep mentioning titles that are probably going to show up on my list later on. That's so great. I love that movie so much.
Oh, it's just so fun. This is one that I didn't see until later. Not until I heard that it was Canadian that I was like, well, Canadian, I better fucking know this. And then I watched it, and like it's just so interestingly well done. It's shot in the Sydney Mines in Nova Scotia, and I know a ton of people from that area. So like, it was one of those things where after meeting these folks, and then they tell me, oh, you should see this movie. It was filmed out where we're from, and then I watch it, and I'm like, this is actually really fucking good.
Dude, yeah, I love that movie so much, and I'll try to save my gushing for a little bit later with that one, but I have to ask you, because we're on the subject of My Bloody Valentine, did you see the remake?
I did.
What did you think of the remake?
Remakes are so tough, man. I think they did a good job, like they really tried at it, but it didn't have necessarily the heart that the original had.
No, I could totally relate to that. Quick little story for that, the remake. I loved the original so much. The remake was in 3D, and it was right at that peak when, you know, our listeners know that I hate 3D now, except for old gimmicky 3D. But the My Bloody Valentine remake had the gimmicky 3D, like the pickaxe getting thrown at the crowd and, you know, like the kills and everything, like poking out at you and blood splattering on you. So when 3D was really big when that came out, our local theaters in Binghamton, New York, where I'm from, where my co-host Nick lives, they didn't have 3D yet. That's how, you know, far back they were in the times they didn't have it. So I drove an hour and a half away to see it in 3D opening night on a Friday with like a city crowd, and it was insane. It was nutty. But I always ask, you know, just because we're talking about one movie, most of these movies all have remakes for the most part. I'm guaranteeing you almost every movie on my list is gonna have a remake attached to it. Had to ask, man. So yeah,
That makes sense. I mean, 'tis the season, if you will.
Yeah, most certainly. And I guess that leads me to my number 9. And my number 9, I think it's kind of a niche film. More people would consider this more of a exploitation, but I don't. I'm talking about William Lustig's Maniac from 1980. And most people will consider Lustig more famous for directing Maniac Cop, which came after Maniac. I love both of them. But the original Maniac, it focuses on a disturbed and traumatized serial killer who scalps his victims. And yeah, he likes to deface women. And it is such a grimy, dirty slasher. Whenever I watch this movie, I feel like I'm itching the entire time, and I have to take a fucking hot shower after I watch it because it's so dirty. And of course, it stars Joe Spinell, who also wrote it for himself to play the character. And, you know, it's so uncomfortable. This guy just has this fascination, and then he starts to stalk women, and then he brutally dismembers them and cuts them open. And it's insane, man. And it takes place in New York City, and it's shot guerrilla styled, so it's got that really homemade feel to it. He lives in a grungy New York City apartment, and you know, it feels almost like, to me, like the horror Taxi Driver, if you will. And you know, like I said, most of these slashers, we get like a flashy killer, a guy with a mask, or, you know, an attractive looking dude, or maybe they're not. But like Joe Spinell is like legit creepy looking. Like he's got that kind of gritty stone face, like my favorite Charles Bronson. He's not attractive. He's got these big buggy eyes. So he looks like a true creeper. Like when you're walking down the street in New York City late at night and you see that guy looking at you, you'd be legit scared of him. And of course, this film sports some of the best Tom Savini makeup effects and kills ever, including the iconic shotgun kill in the car where Tom Savini shoots himself, basically. So I had to put that at my number 9. I love that movie. Like I said, it's shower worthy after you watch it, but it's so, so good and so bloody. But yeah, man, so that's my number 9, and I'm throwing it to you right now for your number 8.
So for my number 8, I went with a classic camp tale. I went with The Burning.
Oh, yeah. Cropsy.
It's such an interesting tale. You got Cropsy, the poor gent that gets burned alive after some kids do some stupid shit, and then it's kind of almost the birth of the kill one and on to the next.
Yeah, man. And yet again, I feel like we might be having this conversation throughout this entire list, but I may be mentioning that film in a little bit. But yes, great pick, man. Definitely, I feel like we're on the same page here. Hey, great minds think alike, what can I say?
Absolutely, dude.
So I guess that leaves me to move on to my number 8, and I think I might get some shit for this pick and putting it where I'm putting it on my list, but I'm putting it here for good reason. I'll explain why. I am putting Sean Cunningham's 1980 classic American slasher, the original Friday the 13th, at number 8. Yes, Nick, putting the wah, wah, wah sound effect there. I am not the biggest fan of the original. I'll watch it. I've seen it in the theater on the big screen. And it was one of the first ones of the franchise that I watched. And the reason why it's here and it's on this list for best slashers is because this is the one that really changed the game. It came in and it really went gung-ho on the kills. Savini was there, and they really decided to be as creative as possible and make these kills as bloody and gruesome as possible, and it shocked audiences, and it spawned literally every slasher that came after it. There's another little film that I may or may not discuss later on my list that kind of started that off, but this is the movie that really set the standard for shock value and for what audiences you know, weren't expecting to see that they saw in this movie. And after that, well, of course, we got the amazing franchise, which is one of my favorite franchises of all time. So, yes, Sean Cunningham's Friday the 13th at number 8.
No, that's a really good pick, man. Absolutely. And that's just it. It's not my favorite of the series, but it's definitely the one that started it all.
Yeah, and that's why I had to be on here. I feel like none of the others, for the most part, none of the others on this list could have ever come to fruition without the original Friday the 13th, because it broke through, it made a ton of money, and it showed that you could make gruesome, bloody movies about people getting slashed to death, and people will go to see them and love them and enjoy them and come back every year for another one of them. So that's why it's on the list. But I believe we're up to your, what are we at? We're at your number 7.
Yeah, so I'll be rocking number 7, and I went with the 1983 classic Sleepaway Camp.
Oh, awesome. Oh, I love that movie so, so much. You got to tell me, you put Sleepaway Camp on your list. Why is it on there?
Because it was such an interesting twist, because it followed the same vein of a lot of slashers where, like most of the ones on the list here, there's a situation, teenagers getting killed or whatever. And this added a little bit of kind of a different sort of effect to it with its little twist ending. I don't know. It's one of the most shocking moments, at least back in the 80s for film, when they did the old bait and switch.
I definitely agree 100%. I feel like still to this day, I'm within the horror community and meeting young people. I'm going to conventions or to horror fests or whatever, and when they're to see it for the first time, or they have just recently seen it for the first time, it still affects them. They're still like, even in 2017, they're like, oh my God, that ending is so fucking great. And because you have to think of it within the context of when it was made. I mean, mm-hmm. even today when you watch it, I showed it to my wife for the first time like 3 years ago, and she was like, what the fuck did I just watch? What is this? Definitely great. And one of the great things about that one that I love so much is that it puts actual children in danger. Like when bad shit's happening, there's young children there, and you get the sense that something really bad could happen to them. And I love when they raise the stakes, like, hey man, we might actually kill some kids in this. That makes it even more scary. So great.
Yeah, exactly. Because there was always like almost kind of an unwritten, like, yeah, we don't mess with kids. We just, and then these guys are like, hey, we might fuck up some kids.
Yeah, man. When most of your main characters are young kids, you get the sense that, man, one of these kids might get picked off like in a gruesome fashion. So that's a fantastic pick, dude. And I'll move right through my number 7 because you already mentioned it. It's one of my favorite slashers of all time. I had the amazing opportunity last summer to see it at the Mahoning Drive-In Theater on 35mm. It is The Burning from 1981. And I love this movie so much, and I'll mention this probably more than a few times on my next couple picks, so bear with me, but I love this film because how mean-spirited it is. I love when kills are just so brutal. I like them when they're fun, too, but I like when it's so gory and so brutal that you're like, oh my God, like I should feel uncomfortable watching this, but there's a part of me inside that's just, yay, this is so awesome.
Yeah, you're cheering it on.
Yeah, cheering it on. Like, yes, more of it. Please, can I have another? Can I please have another? And this is another film, just like a couple more that I've mentioned already on my list, that sports amazing makeup effects and kills by the iconic Tom Savini. He had the opportunity to do the sequel to Friday the 13th, and he opted to do The Burning instead. There is legend that has been said that The Burning was in the works. The idea for their Cropsey tale was in the works prior to Friday the 13th even being released. Whether that's the truth or not, we'll never know. Two guys were involved in this, the Weinsteins, and I know it's not politically correct to mention those names right now when we're talking about a movie that we like, but hey, this was their first thing that they did, and it was a big hit. So I love this movie. I'm from upstate New York, and the Cropsey legend is an upstate New York / New Jersey thing, which many horror films have been based on. Camp stories, you know, if you went to camps around that time, you'd sit around the campfire and they would talk about Cropsey and scare the kids, and then you'd probably go back to your cabin and jack off to make yourself relaxed and feel better about your life. So that's my number 7, man. The Burning.
Yeah, well, that's the protection, right? The old jerk and sleep.
I mean, if you feel scared, You're upset about something. Your girlfriend just broke up with you. You just got dissed at the bar. You're too drunk. You're over full. I mean, I feel like it fixes any problem when you think about it. At least
I agree.
but that's right, Fear. We're on to you for your number six.
So for number six, and this might surprise some people, or maybe not, I don't know. I actually went to 2006 Adam Green's movie Hatchet.
I am so, so happy you picked this movie. That's fucking awesome, dude. That movie's so great.
Oh, it's so, so much fun. And this was a chance where you get Adam Green, who's kind of been in the scene, and who just picked the perfect cast. I mean, you've got Robert, you've got Kane, Tony Todd. Like, it's just so much fun. There's so much fanfare, and then the kills are top-notch.
Yeah, they definitely are. And I remember when that film came out, and there was so much hype behind it in the horror realm because there hadn't been like a slasher made like that in so many years. And Green literally took the torch and said, I'm going to make the movie that you guys all want. He cast Hodder as Victor Crowley and to create another brand new horror icon, which he most certainly did. And those kills are just, I mean, I haven't seen any kills as good as that first Hatchet since. I mean, I like the sequels. I still haven't seen Victor Crowley, unfortunately. Because that road show they did not come to my town. I know a lot of my friends that saw it. You bastards. But yes, that's a fantastic pick, dude. I love that movie.
Thanks, man.
So, all right. And we're repeating ourselves, but I mean, I got to go with this one. It's one of my favorite slashers. I watch it every single year on Valentine's Day. That's right. It's the Canadian slasher film, My Bloody Valentine. And this movie actually, I found randomly, I believe it was like the early 2000s, and it was when Walmart would do like their $5 deals on a whole bunch of horror movies, random horror movies. And at the time, they would have like a good variety. And I picked this up because the cover had Harry Warden and his miner's outfit with the pickaxe, and there was like a blood splatter on it, and it looked awesome. And I'm like, I have to get this. I have to watch this. And when I did, I absolutely fell in love with this movie. It is one of the most brutal and mean-spirited of the slashers, especially the early 80s slashers. And, you know, as far as the story and these characters, they feel like actually, like, they did shoot this in Canada, as you said, right?
Yeah.
They all feel like legit Canadians, even though they're not. It's not supposed to be taking place in Canada, though, right? I don't think it is.
I don't think it's like the movie is based out of there. I don't believe so.
Yeah, no. So, but I love their accents in the movie, and I mean, it is what it is. I just enjoy it so much. Because I mean, how many Canadian slashers are there? There's only a handful, right? Like, of good ones, at least. I mean, there was Terror Train, you name it. But as far as with Canadian actors, this is the one to watch.
This and Black Christmas were two big standouts that even now, like, you can go back and watch and be like, yeah, fuck yeah.
And this is one that, you know, I'm still surprised. We've talked about a couple of movies that I feel like had horror icons that could have gone to sequels. The Burning is one of them with Cropsey. And with Harry Warden and the image of the miner outfit with the pickaxe, you know, all black with the mask and the breathing apparatus. It literally is so iconic. And it's a shame, I feel like, that they never did a sequel. Out of all the movies that got fucking sequels in the 80s, I mean, dude, some of the worst got sequels. And then I'm sitting here and I'm like, My Bloody Valentine is so brutal and it's mean-spirited, and the kids are all likable in the movie, and I love how it has the local legend about Harry Warden and you can't do anything on Valentine's Day. And obviously, you know, it's a spin-off on what Friday the 13th already did, because they stole from Halloween. Like, hey, let's just pick a holiday. This is Valentine's Day. Let's make a slasher based on that. And it works to great effect. I love this movie so, so much. So, yeah, it's my number six, My Bloody Valentine.
Ugh. Good pick, sir. Good pick.
Thank you. I feel like we're both on the same page tonight. I mean, I can't yell at you about any of your picks. I can't tell you suck for any of them. You're great. But we'll see where we're going now. We're at your number five. What do you got for me?
So for number five, I went kind of newer again. Not quite as new as Hatchet, but for me, I went with Wes Craven's Scream.
Okay, so we might as well get this out of the way then. I'm not going to jump over or anything, but my number five is also Scream, so we might as well just get it out of the way.
Oh, shit, there we go.
We kind of matched up right there, so we can just get this one and move along. But why did you pick Scream at your number five?
Scream was this interesting sort of resurgent with horror, and you get Wes Craven back, who had been in the game for how many years already, just... He made Legends, and then you had it took a legend as Wes to come back and reinvent sort of the new era of slashers to come through with like Scream and I Still Know and blah 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 blah. So for me, and Scream was this really it was really well done because it was also kind of a whodunit on top of the fact that he was recreating like here's Ghostface, he's going to be the next killer icon that you're going to want to know, and here's a great story, here's a lot of really good looking and well known right? kids at the time, and like it was masterpiece, just really really well done.
Yeah, I totally agree with you in every way, and this is one of my favorites, like, ever. The movie's so witty. It's so fun. It's funny, and it's also brutal, and you like all the characters. Like, I can't think of any character that I dislike in the film. And as you said, they're all so pretty looking. And I like, you know, that was a thing in the 80s where they would just cast people that looked good, but everyone in this film has talent, and actually you've seen most of them move on to other things. I mean, yes, Jamie Kennedy just did like Tremors 7 or something for Netflix, but it's cool. Like literally everyone is great in this. And I think the reason this movie is so great is because of the script from Kevin Williamson. He was just sitting home one night. I know the story so well because I love hearing him talk about it. He was sitting home bored one night by himself, and he started seeing like murder mystery stuff on the television, and he grew up loving Halloween. He grew up loving Nightmare on Elm Street, and he just wrote a script basically from a fan's perspective of like, what would it be like to see a movie like from their view? Like, and that's why it's so fun because there's all the winks and the nods, but it's not like it doesn't hurt the movie. It's like makes it more fun for the viewer. Like they're sitting there watching Halloween. And then of course, you know, there's an actual killer in the house, and you said it perfectly. Ghostface literally was the horror icon of the 90s. Like they created that very randomly. They lucked out with that imagery, and I love how brutal it is. One of these days, I know that it won't happen without Wes alive, God rest his soul, but I would love to see an unrated cut of that movie because they had so many problems with the MPAA, and they had to cut the shit out of that movie, especially the ending with the stab fest, you know, back and forth, because they just had, it was so gruesome. But love that movie. Love it so much. We're both on pace, man. So that was my number five. That was your number five. We'll just move on to you right now for your number four.
So for number four, I'm not going to stray away from Wes. And I went with the original Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, my God, dude. We're literally like, I feel like, and ladies and gentlemen, I swear to God, I swear on, I don't know whose life, my dog's life, my dog Goji's life. We did not look at each other's list before this at all.
No,
this,
not at all.
This didn't happen. We didn't talk about it beforehand. I wanted to be surprised, but man, mine might be coming up in a little bit, but great fucking pick. One of the best ever made. Why'd you pick it? I mean, I know why you picked it. But
yeah, this is no brainer. I even watched this. I watched it today, and even watching it today for like the 100th time, I'm like, fuck, that it's just so damn good.
It is. Horror icon, Robert Englund, Wes Craven, which was in a rough patch trying to make a movie. That script had been thrown around for years and everyone turned it down. It was a huge uphill battle for that thing to get made. And then it got made and it was a huge hit. And I feel like it is the game changer. But I may be quiet about it right now because I might talk about it in a few minutes anyway.
Sounds good. All right. I'll leave it at that.
But, dude, I mean, seriously, I feel like we're totally on the same. We're on par, man. We're like, we're in a race right now, but like, we're right next to each other, just looking at each other, kind of winking, like, hey, man, it doesn't really matter who wins this. Not that it's a game or anything, but yep, I'm going to go right now for my number four. And it's a movie you already mentioned. This is one of my personal favorites. Not that any of these are not my favorites, because they all are. But, of course, it's Bob Clark's Black Christmas. And, you know, I might get some shit for this because even though it is a quote unquote slasher, it's more of a home invasion. And I personally like to separate those slightly because for me, a slasher is more about stalk and slash, stalk and slash, stalk and slash, brutal kill, you know. But in this case, this is the movie that went under the radar for a long time. And the question is always out there if John Carpenter had seen this movie prior to him filming Halloween and it influenced him. He has mentioned on more than one occasion that he had talked to Bob Clark about doing a sequel to Black Christmas around the same time that he shot Halloween. So we don't really know. I wouldn't have dared to ask John Carpenter when I met him about it. I just wanted his autograph and a picture and I'd keep my mouth shut. But this movie has so much atmosphere and it's still legitimately fucking scary as shit. The way this film is shot and it's framed, it's very claustrophobic. And it starts the beginning of, as far as American, North American cinema, the handheld shots. Now, I purposely left out giallo films, any Italian quote unquote slashers off my list because I wanted to stick to just straight up slashers because in my opinion, they're kind of separate. Again, give me some shit if you want to, but in this case, this movie really set up doing those handheld shots, you know, going up the stairs into the attic, and it has that atmosphere and it has great likable characters. I mean, who doesn't love the scene where Margot Kidder is talking about the turtle and she's completely fucking hammered?
Yeah.
I mean, I just picture Lois Lane, like, dude, she's fucking wasted. She's talking about the way these turtles are mating or what is she talking about?
Crazy.
And to think about, you know, the fact that later on, Bob Clark would direct probably, arguably, the most iconic Christmas movie ever made, which is A Christmas Story. So, you know, he's mentioned before he loves Christmas, and this one never got any love until probably, you know, the early mid-90s when people started getting it on VHS and watching it. And then, you know, last year they had the 4K restoration, and I just love this movie. It completely evokes Christmas and makes it scary at the same time. Legit. And you don't have to have a ton of blood and gore in this one. You just get that atmosphere. So Black Christmas for me at my number 4.
No, I totally agree. And you hit it right on the head with it. It's got everything you need in slasher wise, but the atmosphere in that film alone is enough to freak you out.
I mean, you're in that house. You're with a bunch of sorority sisters, well, this was a thing back then, especially when, not to say anything against females or anything, because I love empowered women, but, you know, we have Margot Kidder's character. She's an empowered woman in the film, even though she's drunk half the time, you know, but, you know, it's setting these films up where you want to feel like these characters could be in complete danger. If there's no police around, or there's no adults around, or there's no men around, or there's no one of authority around, like where they could legitimately get killed or hurt, you know, that's when the danger comes into play. And that's what makes it scary. And of course, a house full of sorority sisters, it's definitely a scary place when someone's in the house and they don't know about it. So definitely, I love it so much. But I'll quit blabbing. It's on to you, man. What is your number 3 slasher?
So number 3, man, I went, this one, I still to this day love. I've got a soft spot for my boy Leatherface, and I went the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Awesome, dude. That's a fantastic pick. I love that movie very, very, very much. I feel so shitty that Tobe Hooper died this last year, and I did not get a chance to try to meet him at any of the conventions, but it was rare that he did them. But man, that guy was such a genius. He literally started a whole trend with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and there's no other film like it since, even the films that he had his hand in. I love too, don't get me wrong, but so yeah, why did you personally pick that film though?
It was one of those, one of the ones where I remember when I saw it, and I know it was kind of marketed as like, you're about to witness some shit, but I remember the first time I saw it, I actually did feel like maybe I was watching a snuff film. Like, it just had that extreme rawness to it.
Right.
And it was just so quirky, so strange, and each character had its own, this, like, little fucking, I've never, I, you just, it was like this group of crazies that you don't get in most films. And instead of having, like you said, the stalk and kill, it was just some folks that picked the wrong place, wrong time. And then, yeah, the Sawyers just took care of them.
Hijinks ensue. Shit happens to them. Exactly. And I think that's the scariest thing about it. Yep, because they're out in the middle of nowhere. They don't even know where they're at. You don't feel there's a sense of danger or anything. You just feel, oh, I'm out in the middle of nowhere, the middle of the country. And then shit just starts happening. And then they're trapped because they don't know where they are or what's going to happen. And it's definitely one of the most frightening films ever made. It's an absolute classic. And I love that movie so, so much. So that's a fantastic pick, dude. Fantastic. It's funny because I'll be honest to our audience right now. I got this wrong at work last week during my Friday meetings at work. We do these little meetings and we have like icebreakers right before we get to work on the important shit. And like, oh, let's do Halloween trivia. Let's do horror trivia or something. And Justin will get all these right. And I got wrong how many kills were in the movie. And I felt absolutely horrible about it. So it was multiple choice, but I still got it wrong. So, yes, they can put that in there again. I'm admitting my fault, so it is what it is. But that's a great pick, dude. Loving this list so far. This has been so much fun. I'm moving on. I'm getting to my top three right now. And, yep, my number three is my favorite of this franchise. And, yes, I'm generic in the sense that, yes, I'm going to follow suit with everybody else in the world, but Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter, directed by Joseph Zito and starring Corey Feldman and Ted White as Jason Voorhees, which is still in this version the Jason that will run at you as fast as he possibly fucking can. And he'll slash at you and grab at you, and there's no remorse with this version. I love this version of the character, and I love this film in the franchise. I think it's the strongest film in the franchise, and I'm not the minority. Most fans feel the same way. Jason's brutal in this movie. Tom Savini is back for the effects, and I mean, you name it, it's got Crispin fucking Glover doing the best dance scene in any film, cinema history. You know, it's got the best kills, mean-spirited kills, the corkscrew, Crispin Glover's death, spoiler alert, you know, the hatchet to the face. I just absolutely love this movie. Whenever I'm feeling down, you know, man, you know those nights when you're just like, ah, oh, work sucked, or my wife bitched at me too much, or, you know, it's a comfort movie. Some people might put in, I don't know, like The Goonies, you know. Some people might put in like Back to the Future, which I also love. But, you know, for me, it's like I secretly just put in The Final Chapter and I just watch them get slashed to hell. And I love this movie so, so much. And as a slasher, because this is a slasher list, I feel it is one of the strongest because you care about these characters. And as you had just said a little bit ago, in this film particularly, each character is very different. They look different. They have a different personality. They're a different kind of person. And, you know, I love that whole you're a dead fuck thing in the car with the Teddy with his computer. And, well, the computer says, you're a dead fuck. I'm a dead fuck. Okay, give it to me. You know, I just love it. It's fun. It's funny. It's brutal. I love it. There it is. That's my number three.
That's a fantastic pick, man.
I'm moving on to you, though. We're getting down to the nitty gritty, to the bloody. What's your number two?
So number two, and so this is pretty cool. So originally it was going to be The Final Chapter. And there was a last minute substitution because I decided to go. I feel like The Final Chapter, Friday the 13th, is definitely possibly the strongest movie of all of them. But my favorite out of all of them is 6, Jason Lives.
Yes, I love you for this so fucking much. That's so great. I love you for that pick, dude. You got to tell me. Enlighten us.
Well, so it's kind of cool the way that this played out because with your number 3 leading into my number 2, we've got Tommy Jarvis back and trying to finish it off once and for all, which turns horribly wrong for him. And we end up with our like version of zombie Jason where he comes back to life due to the lightning. And then it's just nonstop. Like it's got this like awesome sort of soundtrack of like metal and just kills and just zero fucks. And it, I think it was one of the first ones I saw, and it forever will have my heart.
I can't agree with you more. If I had more space on this list, believe me, if we were doing like a top 20 or 25, this is most definitely going to show up in my honorable mentions because I love this movie so fucking much. It's probably, I would have to say, in a lineup of my favorites of the franchise, it would be The Final Chapter and then Jason Lives. Because yeah. Jason Lives is definitely like the most fun one to watch, I feel like, out of all of them, because it's got the brutal kills, but they're still fun. And it's got like a light sense to it. And I think it's because of director Tom McLaughlin. Like, he was a huge old school horror fan. And he came into this shit like, what am I going to do with this? It's a part six. And you have to imagine what these directors were saying in the 80s. Like, man, really? I'm going to do like a part six or a part seven or whatever, a part fucking 20 of, you know, like a franchise yeah. that's already been overdone. And McLaughlin brought like a fresh view on the thing and said, let's poke fun at it a little bit, but still make it brutal and still make it fun. It's so totally 80s, as you said. I love the soundtrack. And, you know, it features a song, you know, that we do on this show all the time. Nick, go ahead and play it in there. 'Cause I'm back. I'm the man behind the mask. And I'm out of control. Yes, we're both out of control here, ladies and gentlemen. Fear just picked one of my favorite Jason movies. That's not on my list, and I feel kind of jealous.
Fucking right. You should be.
A little bit. A little bit, man. But, you know, it is a top 10, so we had to pick and choose. So, boom, boom, boom. Ki-ki-ki, ma-ma-ma. I'm going to my number two right now, though, and it's a movie you already mentioned. And I won't blab about this one for too long because anyone out there that's listening to this show should know everything about this. And if you don't, well, I don't feel the need to have to educate you. There's a thing called Google and Wikipedia. Yeah. You can do it yourself or just go watch the fucking movie yourself. But it is Wes Craven's A Nightmare on Elm Street. The reason why this is at number two on my list is because of the simple fact that we're talking about slashers, and this movie literally takes the whole genre, flips it on its head, and does something completely fresh and new and different. In 1984, mind you, and this is only a couple of years after Friday the 13th came out, and there had been so many movies, so many copycats just trying to cash in on it. And Craven had this script for years, and he was just trying to sell this thing, and he had a really interesting idea that no one would buy. They kept saying, it's not scary. If people know that it happens in your dreams, they know they can wake up and it's no longer a threat to them. But in this case, dude, he hit the nail on the head, because your nightmares are what scare you the most, because you can escape them only by waking up. They can happen to you every single night of the week. You can literally be scared every night by different nightmares that happen to you. And Freddy finds you in that dream world, and he can do whatever he wants. He has all the power in the world, and he is the most interesting, the most fun, and the, I would say, has the most character out of any slasher icon ever. And he spawned the most, I would say, probably the most important franchise out of any horror film ever of all time, just because Freddy is probably arguably, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I think he's the biggest horror icon.
Well, unfortunately, I'm more of a Jason man, so, but I do agree that those two are top two.
I love them both pretty much equally, but as far as popularity, you know, it's like when you walk down the street, I always look at it this way. Say walk down the street in New York City, walk down the street in any large city that you're at, and ask people, do you know who Jason Voorhees is or Freddy Krueger? I feel like more people, maybe a smaller percentage, but it would be, they would know who Freddy Krueger is. So that's why I say, because the films had more personality, they got more inventive, all the fantasy elements and everything, and they had some bigger stars in there. And of course, Robert Englund, who I had the amazing opportunity to meet, and I love that
so
guy.
So jealous.
He's so
jealous.
So great. Oh, well, I mean, he'll talk your ear off, man. If you ever get the opportunity, just pay the money and sit there. And as long as he'll talk, just sit next to him, because he won't move you along. He'll talk to you for half an hour about what he did that morning for breakfast and some random movie set he was on in 1986 that wasn't a nightmare movie. And he just loves talking, so...
That's awesome. And it's interesting. So like I said earlier, so I watched A Nightmare earlier. And then I also watched for the first time Never Sleep Again.
Oh, I love that documentary. What did you think of the documentary?
It's so much. You know, it's funny. I love shit like that. I love the Crystal Lake memoirs. That stuff I almost love as much as the movies themselves.
I agree.
And it was really interesting to watch this one, especially just hearing Wes talk, and he's like, yeah, I wrote Last House on the Left in 3 days, and then I moved on to The Hills Have Eyes, and then yeah, you're like, you son of a bitch, like, and then you just you see that he's had this for a while, and everybody's passing on it, and it's fucked to think about it now, because now, like, we can look back, and like you said, Freddy is such a huge icon. These movies changed the game, especially once they started adding even more fantasy elements, even more sort of just sky's the limit within the dream worlds. So, I mean, I'm glad that finally they took a look and had the movie made, and we are where we're at. And that's an awesome number two pick, man.
Yeah, I had to, because, you know, it's so important, and it is one of those where anywhere you go, man, I mean, especially we were talking about earlier on, intro to the show, Halloween season, you'll still see a Freddy Krueger. And when was the last time a Freddy Krueger movie came out? When was the last time A Nightmare came out? And no, we don't count the remake. And I'm not a hater. I don't hate on that movie as much as other people do. You know, because the fault wasn't in its star. I'll tell you that much. But it's still an icon. You see it at Halloween time every single year, and people still talk about him every single year. So it's stood the test of time. It will continue to. And our fans know it was the first bloody horror film that I showed my daughter. She's now 13. She's about to turn 14. And she was legit scared by it. And I said, well, we'll start with that one. I didn't realize, I'm like thinking it's more tame. And I'm like, God damn, that Tina scene when she's flipping around the walls in the air and she gets slashed in this, you know, her whole torso. It's like, that shit's brutal, man, when that blood pours out. So
that's funny. Actually, maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that after this, because I have a daughter. She's just turning 12.
Awesome.
And so, yeah, I'm just starting to get her into things. So maybe we can talk about that after.
Yeah, dude, we'll get into that in our third segment. But hey, dude, we're down to it. We're here. We're down to your number one, bro. We're dun, fucking dun, here. Dun, 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 dun. What?
So my number one, the slasher that takes the cake, the one that I watch, not only do I watch every year at this, I usually watch it two or three times a year, but it's John Carpenter's Halloween, man.
Okay, dude, so we're there. That's my number one, too.
It's gotta be.
I mean, I feel like if you look up any list online, or you know, you listen to any podcast that's horror-related, and they count down slashers or anything, Halloween's going to be at the top of their list. But you know what? You're our guest, so I'm gonna give you the room here. Why'd you pick it, man?
For me, it's always just been that one. It's John Carpenter made a masterpiece. Like, between directing it, scoring it, everything is fucking fantastic. Donald Pleasance, great. Jamie Lee Curtis is hot. There was just so many good things. Michael Myers, The Shape, man. What else do you need? It's all there. It's creepy. It's stocky. It's got its jump scares. It's got just some straight up moments that even just the sound alone gets you to know shit's about to pop off.
I totally agree with you. I mean, our fans know, our listeners know that this isn't just in my top horror films of all time, that John Carpenter's Halloween is my number two favorite film ever made of all time. And they've heard this story, but you know what, guys, you're listening to this, I'm going to make you listen to it again. This was one of the first that got me really, really hardcore into the genre. I was at my buddy, his name was Matthew Roach. I was his house. He was my old drummer. In one of my first bands, I was like 13. We were called Impalement, and we were like trying to be like Cold Chamber and like Korn. Nice. And shit. It was pretty cool. We had like 7-string guitars and stuff. We were just like fooling around. But I was at his house on a Friday night staying overnight, and it was fall season, like late September, early October. And he had like Halloween on VHS that he had recorded off TV. And he showed it to me, and it was in a dark room, I was legit scared shitless by this movie, but also so intrigued where I couldn't take my eyes off it and I couldn't stop thinking about it. Then I was like, oh, there's sequels to this? And that was back when the days that we both miss. I know you miss it too, man. We're on the same age roughly. So I miss going to the video store.
Fucking right.
When you could walk in there and just, oh my God, there it is, you know?
Yeah, and you just sit. You could, man. I don't know about you, but I could just be there for hours, just looking at the backs of movies and talking about them, and bullshitting with people.
Exactly, and it, like going in there and being like, "Oh man, I saw the one. I can rent the first one and the second one and the third and fourth." Like, I didn't realize there was that many of them when I was that young. So that was the one. This is the movie that influenced me to get into horror. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. Yes, I'm boasting. I don't give a fuck. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be a dick. But I have met Jamie Lee Curtis last year. It was one of the best experiences of my life. And I have met John Carpenter. And I did do all those Halloween locations, Fear, as you saw on my Instagram recently. And there was no way that I was going to do a family trip out to California without being like, I have to go stand behind the same bush that Michael Myers did. You know, do the walk, yeah. and do all the stuff. And it's so important. In this movie, I feel like this is the one, you know, this is the movie that showed filmmakers that you could take $325,000 and you could make a movie that would gross, you know, $23 million internationally. And then eventually $70 million worldwide this movie made. On such a shoestring budget, on such a simple concept with no big stars. I mean, Donald Pleasance was a star, but he wasn't like, you know, at the time he wasn't like a huge star. And it showed you could make movies for on the cheap and then, you know, gross tons of money. So that's what started the slasher genre. That's what made Sean Cunningham make Friday the 13th. And well, the rest is history. So that's it. Halloween is my number one. And that was your number one, man.
Damn right.
So I feel like, you know, we were both on the same pace here. That race is over. And I feel like we both kind of went over the finish line at the same time. So no real surprises there. But you know what? All rightly so. All great films. So what we're going to do right now, we're going to take a little break and we're going to be back to finish out the show. I hope you guys all enjoyed our top 10 slashers. And when we get back, we'll just bullshit and finish it out. We'll be right back.
This week in epic film history.
No pumpkin this week. I got in trouble by filling my wife's pumpkin bottle full of water and pretending it was beer and putting it back in the fridge. I did it. If you listen to last week's podcast, you'll know that I drank the pumpkin during the podcast. I filled it up with water, put it back in the fridge, and my wife didn't believe me the entire day that I did that until later that evening. And then I had to go buy her another bottle, and I got scolded for it.
Look at that T-shirt fly.
That is officially my countdown movie there and TV review swag, which I got today. All right, so
what up?
Now that we're all officially watching, all right, here it is. I got some rum barrel aged pumpkin. It's not pumpkin, Justin, by the way. There's no such fucking beer as pumpkin. We're opening this fresh.
Look at that, it's a pretty label.
This is going to taste like fucking ass because I already know. I got this because I was hoping maybe the rum barrel age would really help to kind of dull this, but here we go.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to it.
Oh, it tastes like the inside of a hobo's asshole with rum in it.
It's not that bad. I know it's not that bad. Get out of here.
Oh, no, it like it waits. It kind of hangs out on the palate for a little bit. You get the pumpkin first, like so you get the kind of that nasty shit-ass pumpkin beer flavor, and then you just get like the kind of rum finisher. It's like I drank some pumpkin and then took a shot of rum. And it tastes fucking terrible.
Oh my. You're the one that decided to get the rum barrel aged one. No one told you to get that.
I hate the normal pumpkin, so I was hoping that if I got this pumpkin.
Now you hate this one more!
This has led to speculation by fanboys who love to fillate Boba Fett until there's no fucking tomorrow that Boba Fett's coming back. Boba Fett flew out of the Sarlacc.
He's in the
Boba
film.
Boba Fett's gotta be. No, he's not. Fuck you, he's not in the film. He's not.
That's
he's not.
Him.
He's
That's
dead.
Him.
He's dead.
That's him.
He is slowly being digested. He is 30 years into it. He's got 970 more to go inside the Sarlacc. He's dead. He's dead. He's dead. He's dead. He is a nobody. He is a zero, nothing character. He's got like four lines of dialogue in the entire original trilogy, and he gets bitch slapped by a blind dude, and his jetpack breaks, and he falls into a fucking big mouth in the desert.
And I know you have a lot to say about this. The whole Kylo Ren being Luke Skywalker.
Oh,
let's
Jesus
hear it.
Christ.
Go. Unleash it.
Well, no, this is going to be part of a new segment that we're going to do called Nick's Rant.
Wrong! I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore! Dennis! I'm going to send you to Sing Sing! Sing Sing, Dennis! Sing
Sing! Luke Skywalker's not fucking Kylo Ren. What the fuck is wrong with people? No, it's, I'm sorry, Adam Driver and... There's a shot in the trailer in the forest when, you know, you've got Finn standing there with Anakin's lightsaber ignited and Kylo Ren is approaching him, sans mask, and I want to talk about the fucking mask, but sans mask, and you see Adam Driver's hair and everything, and we've seen the release pics of Adam Driver as Kylo Ren. It's not Luke Skywalker. I get that people are confused because they don't see him in the trailer, and fanboys need to try to invent some reasoning for where could Luke be, what's Luke doing, who's Luke touching, who knows. So I get it, but Kylo Ren is not Luke Skywalker. They're not the same character. They're not even close to the same character. Have you seen Hamill lately? Have you seen Adam Driver? Adam Driver is tall, thin, lanky. Mark Hamill, short, not lanky.
I'm back. I'm the man behind the mask. Ooh, yeah. And I'm out of control. I'm back. Dun, 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 dun. We're both back. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. We just got done with our slasher countdown there, our top 10 slashers. I'm still joined here by Fear from FearCast. Did you have fun, man? Did you enjoy that as much as I did?
Oh, absolutely, man. And it was made even better by the fact that a lot of our shit added up, which I figured it would, man. Like, we've been talking on Instagram, so I knew that we kind of both know the horror game, and it was awesome. And the ones that were different in great ways, and this has been really fun.
Awesome, dude. I'm so glad to have you on the show. Did you have any at all honorable mentions for your list that you might have thought about putting on, that you didn't put on, that you just want to mention for the hell of it, anything at all?
Well, I don't know. I know a lot of people will talk about like Child's Play and the Candyman and Jeepers Creepers and shit like that. And I get where some people would feel like those would fall on the list, but I feel like our lists were solid. Now, what did you have? Did you have some?
I did. Actually, one of them you mentioned, you had it on your list. It was Sleepaway Camp. That's probably my top one that was on my honorable mentions. Pieces, the Spanish horror film, which, God, I love that movie. Halloween 2, which I feel like, you know, it's not Halloween 1, but I still enjoy the hell out of it. Joseph Zito's The Prowler. Of course, Madman, which I'll be talking about in a few minutes here. And then Blood Rage, which was also originally titled The Slasher. Now, Madman, I'm mentioning hot on the heels of myself and Loy Sauce hosting Dismember the Alamo at our local Alamo Drafthouse DC Theater here in One Loudon this past weekend. Dismember the Alamo, for those of our listeners that are not aware, is a yearly horror fest where they show three horror movies and some surprises. And this year, well, it was a different kind of idea than they normally go with. We actually decided to unveil the films only because we were showing the brand new Synapse Films 4K restoration of Dario Argento's Suspiria. And people were kind of clamoring for that. They wanted to see it. So we decided, when I decided the poster, I'm just going to throw all that shit on there so people saw it. So they came, they enjoyed, and luckily, Loy Sauce was nice enough to have me help co-host the thing. I introduced Madman. People really seemed to enjoy that movie, and I made them chant Madman Maz. So it was pretty cool. It's a lesser-known slasher and one that, you know, is very close to my heart. So, yep, those are my honorable mentions. And Alamo Drafthouse, God, I love you so much. Thanks for letting me co-host that event this past weekend. It was a huge show. Lots of people came out, awesome costume contest, and lots of horror fans. So, man, I'm so in mode for the Halloween season. And like I talked to you pre-show, I'm going to be depressed next week. I already know it. I know it.
Yeah. It's going to happen. But at least we've got all this Christmas horror that you can go into. But yeah, I feel the same way, man. Once October 1st hits, and like I said, everybody kind of gets into it. Everybody's like, the fall, the air changes, the leaves start to change. It just gets that little bit more spooky.
And, you know, I decided this year, I'm going to be spooky with my daughter. She's 13. She's going to be 14. This may be one of her last years actually trick-or-treating. So what I decided to do is I'm going to be Bob from the original John Carpenter's Halloween, both of our number one on our slasher list, just with the ghost sheet over me and my glasses. And I'm actually going to do this, dude. I'm going to trick-or-treat. I'm doing it. When she goes up to the door, I'm going to stand up behind her. I'm just going to hold out my bag or my pumpkin and not say anything and see how many houses will actually fill my bucket, my little pumpkin, without me saying anything. It's an experiment.
Interesting. I just want to see. It's good.
Because I go up to the door, you know, I'm already up there with her. I just want to see if they'll question it or not. Because I know my grandfather, God rest his soul, he used to always complain. I remember being like 11 and going to his house because we'd travel like 15 miles to go down to his neighborhood to go trick-or-treating. And he'd always complain, these damn kids, they're like 15, 16. You can tell they're older. I see a beard on them, kids. You know, and he would complain that he's like, he would turn them away because they looked older. So I'm just curious if anyone's going to turn me away or not.
That'll be really interesting. I remember being like 12, 13, and I had like one of those pervy little mustaches. And I did have some people that were like, you're too old.
That's
when they got egged.
Exactly. And there's a part of me, tell me if I'm wrong at this. I mean, my daughter's 13, she's going to be 14. And I keep saying this randomly. It just keeps coming out. I'm not even thinking about this consciously. I keep saying, we need to put the mischief back into Halloween. I'm like, no, I can't tell her that. It's because she's so tame with it. She just likes her, you know, going to the one occasional haunted house and then trick-or-treating. But I'm like, oh man, I kind of miss that. There's like part of me that actually misses being that bad kid that egged the house or toilet papered. Or, you know, when I was 14, my first year non-trick-or-treating, me and my buddy would hide on top of the roof of his house. He had like a window. We could go out on the roof and we would drop stuff on them or scare them from the roof. And his dad was handing out candy and it was great. I loved it. So
yeah, man, that's a good time.
Exactly.
I don't know when the last time I've seen a toilet papered house was.
Around here, it's been a while. I feel like they're a little bit more tame here in Northern Virginia. Maybe I need to put the trick back into the trick or tree. I don't know, but it's been a ball, man. I got to tell you, it's been an absolute blast having you on the show. Nick, I don't know what you're doing tonight. You're probably eating a steak at a fancy restaurant for your restaurant podcast that you're doing. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, I will announce it here. Nick does have a separate podcast, and he probably already told you about it, but he's doing his own thing with fine dining, and I love him to death for it. So that's leaving me to talk about horror tonight. But Nick, thanks so much for editing this show and all the hard work and effort you put into the Epic Film Guys podcast. I'm here with Fear, and we talked about our top 10 slashers, and this is about the end of the night. So, hey, man, for our listeners that loved what you had to say and are interested in what you do for your show, why don't you tell them where they can find you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you dug what I did or what I said or who I am and all that goodness, jump on over to fyfcstudios.com. It's got links to all of our social media, including our YouTube channel, where I post videos each week. Some of them I'm just asking random questions, and actually I'll be looking to flesh it out a little bit more. As well, depending on when this airs, on Saturday, October the 28th at 8 p.m. Eastern, we will have a live event. If it's already passed, you guys missed out. That sucks. If not, make sure you tune in to be part of it. We'll be dressed up. We do it every year for our FearCast Halloween Live. where we'll take calls via Facebook Messenger or if you've got my number, and we'll chat about the things that you love for Halloween or this time of year, or horror movies and whatnot, which Justin's already done a fantastic job of talking about our slashers. So, I mean, it's good time. So head over to FYFCstudios.com. Subscribe to the podcast, Fifthcast or Fearcast or whatever you like. As well, I'm actually doing another podcast that has to do with iconic music and movies with Mandy from Little Geek Lost. And you can check that out at bobeatspod.com. It's called Box Office Beats. Check it out, where we talk about iconic songs. So whether it's themes or even just like songs from film that we love. And it's really quick. It's about a half hour long. But yeah, anytime, man, check us out and reach out. We'll chat.
Sounds great, man. And you know what? That event you're talking about where people can call in, you know, and you guys will be in costume and talk about your favorite. I may even just prank you guys. I may have to just like troll you guys in my Bob costume. And
there you go.
I don't know. Maybe I'll just like stand there and just breathe into the phone and you guys will be able to hear me and can't get your ghost, Bob.
Yeah, I was just going to say. Yeah.
They'll do something, but that's awesome, dude.
That's awesome.
Again, I got to thank you so much for being on the show this week. You filled a very large gap with Nick not present during this week on the show, but it's been an absolute blast. So ladies and gentlemen, you know where you can find us. You can find us on Twitter at Epic Film Guys, Instagram at Epic Film Guys, on Facebook at Epic Film Guys. And of course, you know, we're around. Get a hold of us. We have the Hobzitter's Dumpster, which is our fan group on Facebook, where you can go in there. And of course, if you're still part of the Epic Film Guys 31 Day Horror Challenge, you can go in there and comment your picks. You have to be part of the Hobzitter's Dumpster to be able to do so. So if you're still interested in being part of that horror challenge, I know a lot of people do it. 31 Days of Halloween, 31 Days of Horror, you name it. Go and request access to the Hobzitter's Dumpster and you can comment all your picks that you've been watching and see where you stack up. I know, oh man, our listener and supporter Scott LaVar, every year he completely destroys it. I can't ever keep up with this guy. He's watched, I feel like, more horror movies at least than I could ever watch during this season. Of course, Jared Taylor is right there hot on his heels, and we always have those veterans that just kill it every single year. We appreciate you so much, and thank you to all of our sponsors. For myself, for Nick that's not here, and for Fear, thanks again for joining us here on the Epic Film Guys podcast. I am Justin, and we will see you
at the movies.
Out of control.
Yes. Wildly out of control.
Are you the man behind the mask?
I fucking hate you. Is this what tonight's show is going to be like?
I'm the man behind the mask.
I'm the man behind the mask.
And I'm out of control. Man behind the mask. He's the man behind the mask. And he's out of control. I'm the man behind the mask. I'm the man behind the mask. And I'm out of control. And he's out of control.
This was a podcast from the Podfix Network. check out more shows like it at oddfixnetwork.com.